We finished Luke chapter 15 last week, which dealt, of course, with parables. Parable of the lost sheep, parable of the lost coin, parable of the lost boy. All of those parables had to do with attitudes toward the lost, especially God's attitude toward even one that's lost, and how important that one is. We looked at good attitudes and bad attitudes, especially bad attitudes as depicted by the Pharisees, and all that they had, all the blessings that they had had by being God's chosen people for centuries, and yet they were unthankful, they were ungrateful for what had been given to them. And of course, we have seen that countless times in our study of the life of Christ, how they were very hypocritical, how they were self-righteous, and they seemingly just continued to do everything they could to stop Christ. Tried to have Him killed, or some of the Jewish people tried to have Him killed numerous times. Now we're down to the last few months of Christ's life. He is in Jerusalem. We've talked about the various times He's been in Jerusalem here recently and various things He's done. Now He's gone out into the region of Perea. That's where some of these parables are taking place. He is both talking to His disciples, but also some of the Pharisees are hearing it. Especially you'll see that today in Luke chapter 16, because the Pharisees, again, respond very negatively to what Jesus has to say. So that's the background to the parables we're going to look at today. So Luke chapter 16, this is the beginning of the second group of parables. The first group, as I just mentioned, was the parable of the lost sheep, lost coin, lost boy. And then these parables come right on, you know, right at the end of those. It's all the same context, it's all the same circumstances, same people. And that has to be kept in mind when we interpret the parables. This first parable is a study in contrast. Contrast of different types of people, different types of attitudes. Chapter 16, verse 1 of Luke. He also said to His disciples. So this is given to His disciples, but the Pharisees are listening, as we'll see at the end of the parable, because they're the ones that respond to it. There was a certain rich man who had a steward, and an accusation was brought to him that this man was wasting his goods. Okay, that's how it starts. There's a rich man. We don't know a lot more about the rich man as far as the parable goes, other than he was a rich man, obviously had a lot of land, because this steward was in charge of apparently farms and what was going on those farms, those lands, agricultural lands. And the rich man receives an accusation that one of his stewards was wasting his goods. This is the same word, same root word that we get from the parable of the prodigal son when he went off and wasted his inheritance. It's essentially the same word. He squandered it. He threw it away. So he wasn't using what he had been given wisely, just like the parable of the prodigal son. He had been given his inheritance, and instead of treating it with respect and using it wisely, he squandered it. Well, this steward says he did the same thing. He had been given, he was in charge of at least a certain part of this rich man's land and resources. And instead of using it wisely, which is what he should do, should have done, he was squandering it and wasting it, either through ignorance or through deceit. He might have been dishonest. People have different ideas about whether he was dishonest or not, but certainly seems at least part of it that he was. So he was wasting, squandering, throwing away what he had been given in charge of. So the rich man then calls the steward and says to him, "What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be steward." So this guy has lost his job. Right here at the very beginning, the rich man obviously believed the accusation. Apparently there was enough proof that the rich man says, "Okay, steward, you're done with. Okay, it doesn't make any difference what you say now because you've lost your job." And the steward understands that by his subsequent actions. The steward understands that he's lost his job and he's not going to get it back. It's real obvious from the parable. So the steward has lost his job. He has to give an account to the rich man. And so notice what happens. So the steward says within himself, okay, he realizes he's lost his job, so he says, "Man, what am I going to do now?" He knows he can't go back. He can't go back to the rich man and get it back. That's out of the question. So he's saying within himself, he's talking to himself, because he'd had a great job, apparently. I mean, he had been given a lot of responsibility. He was in charge of a lot of resources and probably a lot of people. So he had a really, really great job, and he blew it. Either, again, through ignorance or dishonesty. So he says, "What shall I do? For my master is taking the stewardship away from me. I cannot dig." And of course, being a laborer was pretty common at that time. And he says, "I cannot dig." He maybe wasn't physically able to dig. You know, he might have been past the age to be a laborer, past the age where he had a lot of physical abilities, so maybe he couldn't do that. Maybe he was too weak. And he might have gotten that way through his dishonesty. So, you know, that can happen as well. He had been using or misusing the rich man's goods, apparently for his own good. So he might have been using this to have a pretty soft life. And he wasn't able to do that type of work anymore because of what he had been guilty of. So he says, "I can't dig, can't do that." And then he says, "I'm ashamed to beg." You know, there's always been beggars throughout time. I assume there will always be beggars. He says, "I'm ashamed to beg," because here was a guy that had a really important job and was in charge of a lot, had a high position, and all that's taken away immediately. So he says, I'm ashamed to beg because people will see me standing on the corner or whatever, begging. He says, "I have way too much pride to do that. I've been living this great, you know, exalted life, and I don't want to go around and beg." But I think something that's important here, even though he had this great job and had been misusing his stewardship, he hadn't prepared, had he? Now, you'd think that if he had been wise in that respect — it says he was wise in other respects later — but he wasn't wise in preparing for the future. Because here he finds himself, even though he'd had this high-paying position, what we would call a high-paying position, he's destitute, basically. He's just destitute. And of course, we see that in our world, you know, all the time, don't we? People that make enormous sums of money, and then we find out they're filing for bankruptcy or they're flat broke, and we go, "How in the world did they do that? They've been making tons of money. How'd they do that?" Well, probably like this guy, been wasting it, okay, squandering it, throwing it away, just like the prodigal son. The prodigal son threw away a big inheritance. He wasted it, you know, on friends or luxuries, throwing it away. Well, this guy had done the same thing. So remember, this parable comes right on the heels of the parable of the prodigal son. And you, I think we have to take them together. Yes.
In a sense, he's kind of like a commendation to both of the sons. In one sense, he's pondering the master's money, but in the other sense, as a caretaker of the master's son, he probably had use of it himself.
Absolutely.
He took care of it.
Yeah.
He would have still been all right. So yep. Actually, he played both those other two roles.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, he had apparently a really good job. And if he had done what he was supposed to, been a faithful steward, been a good steward, then he wouldn't have found himself in that type of predicament. But he did. He hadn't... go ahead. I'm sorry.
He doesn't say so, but just from judging, studying the rest of the story, I kind of got the idea that he was embezzling.
Yeah, I think there does seem to be that kind of underlying tone that he had been dishonest somewhere along the line. And I think so. And of course, if he wasn't being a good steward, then that's being dishonest. If he really wasn't doing his job, you know, he had been put in this position, entrusted with this, with these resources, the lands and whatever, and in whatever way, he hadn't been faithful in carrying out his job. So that alone is being dishonest. So that's why he had found himself in that predicament. So he's still talking to himself. Verse 4. So I've resolved what to do. This is what I'm going to do. That when I'm put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses. And when we get reading further, we know who the they are. The people that have owed or worked for this very rich man. So he says, that's what I'm going to do. He says, I can't dig, not able to dig for whatever reason. I'm too proud to beg. So I'm going to go live off these other people. Okay? Really not a very nice person in a lot of respects. Okay? Just not very nice at all. Not a good person. So he says, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to think of a scheme somehow, think of some way that these people who owe the rich man, the master, that they will allow me to come and live with them, basically live off of them. So that was the scheme he put into place. And this is how he started carrying out the scheme. So he says, verse 5, so he called every one of his master's debtors to him and said to the first, how much do you owe my master? And he said, 100 measures of oil, which was quite a bit. 100 measures of oil. I mean, that would be, I think, that was like almost 9 gallons, close to it. And of course, oil, you know, a gallon of oil at that time would get, you know, be worth quite a bit.
Mine said 800 gallons.
Okay. So 100 measures, yeah, that would be 800-900 gallons. A lot of oil. So he said to him, well, take your bill. So this is how much you owed, okay? You owe 100, but take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Well, of course, if you were the debtor, so instead of having to pay back several hundred gallons, you only have to pay back half of it. People would be leaping at that opportunity, wouldn't they? They said, yeah, that sounds like a good deal to me. And remember, the rich man wasn't, the owner wasn't really involved in these daily activities at all. He had trusted all of it to the steward. So it was the steward's job to collect the debts and do all of the day-to-day administration. And so these people had worked with the steward. They hadn't probably worked with the rich man very much, or the guy that owned all this. They'd been working just with the steward. So the steward says, here's how I'm going to get in good with this guy. I'm just going to like write off half of your bill. Just going to write it off. You only have to pay half of it. Well, that's going to get him in good with this guy. So that's what he does. Then he does it again, verse 7. Then he says to another, and how much do you owe? So he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said, well, take your bill and write 80. Again, now he reduced it by 20%. Again, that would probably be, you know, a lot of savings, okay? You know, if you owed today $100,000 and then someone said, okay, you only have to pay back $80,000 of it, I'll jump at that opportunity, okay? So that's a similar type of circumstance here. So I said, take your bill and write 80. So now he's got two people that are really obligated to him. Okay, which that was his point, wasn't it? He said, I'm not going to dig, I can't dig, I'm not going to beg, so I'm going to do something here at the end because I hadn't planned for the future and I'm destitute, basically. He said, I'm going to come up with a scheme that will cause other people to owe me a lot. And so he just started writing off debts to people. And those people would owe him a lot. I mean, that would still happen today, wouldn't it? If the banker suddenly cut my bill that I owed or whatever in half, I'd feel pretty obligated to him if he asked me later to do something, right? That's the guy's scheme here. That's what he's doing. And he's being very worldly wise, okay, which is one of the big points of the parable. That's how people in the world do things. And that's why he's going to compare and make a tremendous, I think, this parable teaches a tremendous lesson when it's over. So that's what he's done. Verse 8 kind of throws people off. But when we look at the whole context of all the parables we've been talking about, it doesn't. So verse 8 says, so the master commended the unjust steward, the rich man who had hired the steward, who had trusted the steward with everything. Now, he had already fired the steward. The steward wasn't coming back. So the master commended the unjust steward. The steward wasn't just. I think sometimes when we read this, we think that the steward is getting commended for his life. He's not at all. He's called an unjust steward. Other versions have unrighteous steward. So this was a bad person. He's not getting commended for being bad. Absolutely. Yeah, this guy is no good. All right. Now that, we never should think that this parable taught by Christ in any way commends him for sin or unrighteousness or being unjust, because the Bible calls him unrighteous or unjust. So he is. So he's not commended for sinning. That's never, ever done. What is he commended? Because he had dealt shrewdly. Okay, and that's one of the big, most important words, I think, in the whole parable. So he's condemned for being unrighteous. Okay, he's condemned for being unrighteous. But he's commended for his shrewdness, which is very different than being unrighteous. He's commended for his, you might say, last hour shrewdness, because this guy was in desperate circumstances. He had lived a good life for a long time, and he had been apparently quite dishonest with what he had been given. And now it's all over. His dishonesty has been found out. His job is done. He's desperate. I mean, this guy was in desperate circumstances. He didn't know how he was going to be able to continue to live like he had been living, because he couldn't dig, he wasn't going to beg. So this was like his last hour shot. This was his last second shot at the buzzer. So he said this is going to be a good scheme. See, he's very worldly wise, and that's what he's being commended for by the master. You're being very worldly wise. And he makes the contrast. You know, I said this is a study in contrast, and that's what he's contrasting here. It says, for the sons of this world, here's the contrast, the people who live in this world for this world and think only about this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. And the sons of light, of course, he's making the comparison between disciples. So it's like he's comparing how people in the world, when they see a goal. This guy had a goal. He was desperate. His goal was, I want to continue living in a pretty good lifestyle. So this guy was so concerned about doing it, he was going to find a way to attain that goal. And he came up with a way to do it. He says, I'm going to go and I'm going to write off these debts and have a lot of people obligated to me, and then I can live the rest of my life in a good way. Yes. Absolutely. And I think that's a direct application here. Because this guy wanted this physical end. He wanted to have a good living, luxurious lifestyle, and he was going to find a way to do it. And he wasn't going to let anything stop him. And that's why I think he says, you know, the sons of this world are more shrewd, okay, than the sons of light. Because we're, first of all, sons of light are not going to do those things, right? They're not going to think up any old way to try and get people to follow them or anything like that. They're not going to do that. Yeah. That's kind of, well, indirectly, that's what he ended up doing, because the people who had owed him that, he was going to go live off of them. And that's what he wanted. He wanted to have somebody kind of take care of him the rest of his life and give him all of this stuff. And I think another contrast is here, often people in the world, when they have this goal, whether it's like this guy or anything else, if they're children of the world, they're going to be very shrewd in attaining that goal. Whereas sometimes, and I think we can get this from the parable, sons of light, disciples of Christ, don't put forth much effort. We have a goal, don't we? And that's the eternal home in heaven. But when you look at Christians sometime, they put forth little effort in trying to reach that goal. And boy, I see that more and more the older I get. It seems like Christians are wanting to do less and less and less. Not that they're earning their way to heaven, but the Bible very distinctly says that a lifestyle is required. So I think we can learn that that sometimes children of the world can teach us a lesson as far as being passionate, being zealous, being very involved. Sometimes they use more wisdom in the physical realm than children of light use wisdom in the spiritual realm. And of course, that shouldn't be the case. We should be the ones showing to the world how passionate we are about living the Christian life. I mean, they should see something very, very zealous in our life, very committed, very passionate. And I don't think the world sees that very much. And I think that kind of leads into the next verse. Verse 9 says, "And I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon, that when you fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home." We are all stewards. I think we learned from, all of us are stewards of something. You know, God has given us resources and opportunities and all of these things. And it's all talked about in that sense. We are given all of this. But it depends on how we use it. I can use it in an unrighteous way. I can use it in a righteous way. Okay, there are, I'm like you, I have certain amounts of money and certain amounts of resources. And God doesn't speak to me directly from heaven saying, you need to do this here and you need to do that there. I make those choices about how I spend that mammon. And I can spend it any way I want. God doesn't force my hand. I can make choices about what I do with it. And we can make really bad choices or make really good choices. You know, we can use it to help people. You know, we've had a lot of opportunities this past week and week or two to help people. And I'm really glad that all the things I've heard about, you know, people helping others, members of the church that are helping people. So we can use our resources to do that. We can use our resources to teach the lost in a variety of ways. Or we can do like this guy. We can we can just be concerned about this world and making a luxurious living in this world and not prepare or think about the next world at all. And those choices He leaves entirely up to us. And we're not forced to do it either way. But we can learn from the world that we need to be very passionate, very zealous, very dedicated, very committed, not to things of this world, but things of the next. And I think people will see in us whether we're more concerned about this world or more concerned about the next. And we need to be, as the next verse talks, we need to be very faithful. He says, "He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much, and he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much." A lot of times it's the small things that really make a big difference. I mean, are you going to be using even small things in a righteous way? Are you going to use them in an unrighteous or unjust way? Again, it's up to us. And often we can tell about our life by looking at the small things, the things that are least. What are you doing, even in it, for small things? Because that tells us about the bigger things in our life. And that's, you know, sometimes kind of difficult. Yeah. And that's what this unjust steward, it was about making plans. So his plan was, well, I'm going to prepare for this world and to live a nice, luxurious life the rest of my time. That's what he had decided to do. And that was his path. And then it was all about personal choices. You know, he could have, and the right thing to have done as far as thinking about eternity was to own up to everything he had done wrong, to, you know, do everything he could to repay if he could, to make those type of choices. But he didn't do any of that. He said, "I'm going to just be concerned about myself and just plan for this world and not the next." Yes? Yeah, the Pharisees were very, very proud. They had a lot of pride. And that, of course, was one of their downfalls for sure. Definitely. Well, it looks like our time is about up. Why don't we try and start there, Lord willing, next week with verse 11. Some great lessons from this parable. Well, we can really learn a lot from this parable. Thank you for all your comments.